Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we interview Tony Rodio, the president and CEO of the Tropicana Hotel in Atlantic City, on that casino's new policy to go after the high rollers in the industry. Tropicana in Atlantic City is just emerging from a dark period in its history. After being purchased by Columbia Sussex after many years of being owned by Aztar, the new owners cut costs to the bone and beyond. Longtime employees were fired, routine maintenance neglected, and regulatory requirements ignored. As a result, the New Jersey Casino Control Commission pulled the Columbia Sussex license, and the state ran the property for 2 years while a sale was being negotiated. Following the bidding, billionaire Carl Icahn became the owner and recently replaced former president Mark Giantonio with Tony Rodio, an Atlantic City veteran who previously ran the Hollywood casinos in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and the Hilton and Resorts properties in Atlantic City. Rodio steps back into a property now poised to tackle the high roller market with new suites and a new attitude. He spoke with me at his offices at the Tropicana in June. Tony Rodio, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to see you again. It's been a while. I never got out to Indiana to see you while you were out in Lawrenceburg, but I understood you did some real interesting stuff there. You had a redesign of the property, rebranding of the property. What's it like being back in Atlantic City now?
It's interesting because when I left, and well, first of all, thank you very much for having me, and it is good to see you as well. You know, when I left, it was just as Atlantic City was going into the throes of this, right, this downturn in 2008. And, you know, from afar, I continued to watch and monitor the numbers. And as you continue to see the slide, and then to come here, it's really striking, the difference in business volumes from when I was here before to now. I mean, I can remember, you know, before when I was here, I was running both the Hilton and resorts. Sure. And the drive from one end of the boardwalk to the other on a Saturday night could take a half an hour, 45 minutes. Right. Now, if you catch the lights right, it's right. You're there. It's pretty stark, the difference.
What direction did you get from Carl Icahn when you got this job?
Actually, he's a fascinating guy, and we had a pretty lengthy discussion. We talked for, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. He didn't give me specific direction. We talked at length about, as you're probably aware, Tropicana, before I got here, embarked on this high-limit table strategy, right, and he wanted my thoughts and insights into that, so we had quite a discussion about that. Talked about the market in general, the Atlantic City market, and what my thoughts are about the Tropicana and what he thought I could bring to the table and what changes he thought, you know, he was interested in what changes I could foresee for the property.
Right. Now, this property has more amenities than you've been involved with before, certainly at the Hilton and Resorts and even in Lawrenceburg. Do you think that gives you more weapons to attract a wider variety of players?
Without a doubt. I mean, this place has got so much going for it and so much opportunity. I think it's one of the prized properties in all of Atlantic City. I mean, you know, it's interesting. We just talked about how the market, the difference in the business volumes when I left and when I came back. The one thing that is amazing to me, if you go into the quarter on a Friday and particularly on a Saturday night, you would never know Atlantic City is going through a difficult time. There are people everywhere. All those restaurants, all those clubs, they're jammed. And we need to figure out how to get that energy and extend it over into the casino, and it's incumbent upon me and the management team here, I think, to put together a 4 or 5 year master plan on how to, again, take that energy and take that look and feel of Old Havana and take that across the street into the main part of the property.
Right. Yeah, on Saturday night, just the energy that you have in there is amazing, and there's so much going on and so many people milling around. You know, if you could bring that over to the casino, that would be a plus. What are some of the ideas to do that?
First of all, and another thing that we talked about quite a bit is obviously the property is, because it's been expanded so many different times, and it's kind of in different states of design, right, and feel, yeah, in different locations. So first we have to get that look and feel consistent. One of the negative things is, as the market is compressed and revenues have gone down, we've contracted the casino space. Yeah. So one of the bad things is we have all this empty space. Right. One of the great things is we have all this empty space. So as it sits right now, it doesn't look good, but it gives us opportunity to take more retail, more dining options, more things that are happening in the quarter and bring some of that across the street. And what I'd love to see is you come in from the quarter into the main casino, have almost like these are just preliminary thoughts, almost like a quarter phase two, or extend the quarter into where the Palm Court is and add some more retail and dining options on this side of Pacific Avenue and take that look and feel of all Havana and have that go through the whole casino.
Sure. We've added some great dining options over the past couple of years, too. I know the Finn restaurant has had great reviews.
And obviously that happened also, obviously, before I was here, but that place is outstanding. Both the views, I mean, I don't know if there's another restaurant in all of Atlantic City where every seat has a great view of the Atlantic Ocean and the beach, and then the quality of the food and the experience that we're delivering there is I think outstanding as well.
Sure, no question. Are you measuring success these days by both gaming and non-gaming revenues? I keep on getting calls whenever the gaming revenues come out, and people, you know, the reporters are just, oh, things are so bad. But are things coming up on the non-gaming side, so eventually you think it'll balance out?
I don't know if it'll ever balance out in this market, but that's certainly a metric that I'm going to be monitoring here and measuring myself against. I think that it is important that we add more of those non-gaming amenities, and I think that that's the segment of the business that we as a property and we as a market really need to focus on. You know, that convenience gaming that now exists in all these other regional markets, that a big chunk of that business is gone, and it's gone forever. So it's important that Atlantic City, like I said, reinvents itself. Right. We need to figure out how to leverage that convention business and get some, you know, we have. It's another great thing that we have here at the Tropicana. We have over 100,000 square feet of meeting space, right, a number of meeting rooms, two large ballrooms, a lot of breakout rooms, 2,100 rooms. With the quarter and all the dining and retail options, this is a perfect place for conventions, and I think that that's something that we need to leverage and do even more of.
A lot of people don't even know that about not only your property but other properties in Atlantic City. There's some really significant meeting space in each of these properties, and I guess that's your challenge to get the word out.
Yes, without question, and I think that it's also, like I said, important for the whole city to take advantage of that. And one of the other things that's a big difference for when I left and now coming back now is seeing how the state is so committed to helping us here in Atlantic City and helping us revitalize and re-energize the market. And I think that will go a long way to helping us attract some of that that convention business that, you know, is, you know, we're competing against all these other cities along the eastern seaboard.
Right. Okay. I want to get back to that towards the end here, but let's talk about the big gambling hit that happened here. It happened twice, right?
They're actually three times.
I was watching a show the other night on one of those outlying cable channels, and it was an old show about Vegas, gamblers in Vegas, and they had a story about this guy Alex Karras
I'm familiar with him.
In the 80s, when he went to Vegas, he won something like $40 million for a short period of time and lost it back.
And now he's living in his car, from what I hear. I've seen that it was on the History Channel.
Right, right. So it's not really that crazy that somebody could come in and win a lot of money, but it is certainly an anomaly. How do you explain that?
I don't know even if I would say it's an anomaly. I think that if you look at what Binion's strategy was and what the strategy that we've employed here at Tropicana is, it's to offer higher limits, which the more you allow somebody to bet, the more they can win. If you're at a $50 table, there's only so much you're going to be able to win in a sitting. But when you're betting $100,000 a hand in blackjack, or in this case, the most recent one, most recent two hits was in craps, where we let the person bet $10,000 on the line. Doesn't sound like a lot, but in craps, it's $10,000 on the line, five times odds. Yeah. He's buying all the numbers. Mm-hmm. He's got the prop bets. This guy had $180,000 on the table. Yeah. If he holds the dice for 15, 20 minutes, he's picking up, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially per roll. So it's huge. It's a huge win, but relative to what he's betting, it's not an anomaly. So that being said, over time you're going to get some of those big hits, but it's going to swing back. Right. And in the case of the Tropicana, they implemented this strategy back in September, And they played very, very lucky for the first 8 or 9 months.
Right.
Just my luck when I arrived. It was a matter of time before it kind of swung back a little bit to the customer's favor. So we've been on this little bit of a downturn. But over time, the odds are obviously in the house's favor. As long as your company, your owner, and in the case, in this case, Mr. Icahn, understands those ups and downs and those swings and is willing to weather those difficult times, I think in the long run it's a good strategy. Nobody else in the market has shown a willingness to compete with us for those really high limits.
Yeah, well, this doesn't look good on the monthly win totals.
No,
it's still something that's going to give your property a reputation. Whether it's you're the luck of your property or you're willing to take these risks, you're gonna get some attention from the players that you're interested in.
Without a doubt. I mean, you can't, because of the limits that we're offering, if you want to have that change your life score and get on that unbelievable roll, if you get that hand of a lifetime, that shoe of a lifetime, that rolling craps of a lifetime, because we'll allow you to increase your bets as you're winning, you got a chance to make a huge amount of money here, which is dramatically different than anywhere else. You can win, obviously, somewhere else, but you can't roll it into a huge number. But we're leveraging it. I think it is great that we're publicizing it and that we are willing to take that action and that we have these big scores. Matter of fact, one of the things that we're doing as a result of that, we have this summer-long promotion where customers come in and it's a lottery-type promotion where you could win $1 million annuity.
Right.
Because we've had these two large wins of over $5 million,
right.
We're changing it starting July 1st, where now you could win $5 million. Right. So anybody could be the next $5 million winner here at Tropicana.
So you're not going to change this policy just because a couple of guys got lucky?
No.
So it's a solid policy and you're going to stick with it?
Yes.
Now, you're also revamping some of the suites here at the Trop. Is that designed to attract more of these type of players?
Yeah, again, keep in mind these decisions that were made prior to me being here, but I think that it makes all the sense in the world. If you're going to offer these limits and you're going to try to attract that higher-end table customer, you need to have the amenities that go along with it, and I think that these suites are going to be an outstanding addition to the property and for that higher-level customer and even for that customer. We're really talking about a handful of guys that come into play at those huge levels, but I think it's even more important for that level below those guys. Those guys are interested in the game, the action, the limits, and the deal. It's the people, I think, a step below that are, still very significant customers where you need to have those amenities. Plus, I think it's important that, we talked about the layout of the property, and we put it in the North Tower, which is the original tower of the property, and it empties right onto the main casino floor, and so it's close proximity to where the action is. So I think they did the absolute right thing, made the right decision when they made the decision to renovate those two floors and create these suites.
Okay. Now, you're going to renovate the high-limit gambling area as well?
Yeah, as I said, one of the first things that I have to do is put together a master plan for the property. I think one of the things that's happened here, and it's through nobody's fault. I mean, it's gone through a lot of different ownerships, but they've done a project here where we built the Rumba Bar, and then we've renovated a space over here, and then they renovated a space over here, and there really wasn't any plan that let's figure out what we know we can't fix it all overnight,
sure.
But at the end of 4 years, what do we want the place to look like?
Mm-hmm.
And that's another great part about my conversation with Mr. Icahn. They understand that they've got a great opportunity here in this facility, but they do understand they need to put some capital in to make it all work and tie in and to be a consistent look and feel and upgrade it. And
sure.
So that's something, like I said, that we have to put together for the next 4 or 5 years.
Now, are you going to go after the high-limit Asian market as well?
Well, we do that currently. I mean, we offer them the same limits. We have higher limits in Minibach as well. We have an Asian marketing team. The difficult thing with that is it's so competitive right now because of the addition of table games in Pennsylvania and obviously Connecticut, and there's a big Asian community in Washington, and now they've added table games in West Virginia. Charlestown has table games, so that also I think hurt Atlantic City.
Let's talk about the rooms. You mentioned the convention business, but you're going after the tour and travel and leisure segments as well.
Again, I've been back about a month, and so I'm not as up to speed on all the numbers as I will be in a couple months. But I think that if you look at the statistics, I think that the Tropicana already probably has more cash room sales than anybody else. So I think that we already do a very good job of that. I think that there's opportunities midweek in particular, as I mentioned earlier, to get more. That's where, weekends here, our occupancies are still right around 100%, if not at 100%. It's that midweek days where we have the opportunities, and I think that's where that convention business, that group business, overnight tour and travel business, where we could really leverage and get some additional non-gaming revenue in the property.
You know, Atlantic City is still a very seasonal market. Do you have plans for the fall and the winter seasons to really ramp up those type of businesses, and especially on the weekends where it's always still important?
I don't think that off-season or weekends are that much of an issue. I mean, you get that occasional really bad storm, and there's some really slow periods right before Christmas and, you know, maybe into January. But I still think that, you know, most weekends throughout the entire year we do fairly well, particularly once you get to February, and the weekends in February historically are very, very strong. I really think the big opportunity for us and for the market is to figure out how to, as I said earlier, reinvent ourselves and get more attractions, more non-gaming amenities, more things for people to come and visit Atlantic City in those midweek periods where we have all the capacity.
Right. And you're creating other excitement. Diane and her team are doing a great job with all the little events that you're having, things in the quarter, the entertainment events, the sporting events. Is this part of your plan to keep Atlantic Tropicana at the forefront of minds when they come to Atlantic City?
There's a big, you know, very competitive market from an entertainment standpoint, but I think that they've done a great job here with some of the entertainment that they've booked, and how I think we have an outstanding theater. I know we have the Goo Goo Dolls coming up in a couple weeks. I mean, we had Deep Purple here. We've had a number of acts that are, you know, I think hit a good demographic, and we've done very well from a cash sales standpoint. They've used the room for MMA fights. I think we have a boxing event coming up. We have, as I mentioned earlier, two wonderful ballrooms, which I think are great midweek for meetings. I think that we have some opportunities and have some thoughts in mind about using them for some four-walled events where you get a promoter to give them the room. I'm actually in discussions with a guy who wants to bring in a YouTube tribute band, which are phenomenal. Sure. And so anything that we could leverage those vacant spaces, empty spaces, and those spaces are particularly empty on weekends, you know, we're gonna do and diversify the experience and attract and touch as many demographic groups as possible.
Now you made reference to the many ownership changes that this property has been through over the past few years, which, you know, caused a lot of uncertainty amongst the employees. What did you do when you got here to assure the employees that you're going to bring a certain measure of stability to the property?
First thing I did is I met with the management team, and actually it still has only been a month, but in the next few weeks I'm going to be putting together all employee meetings where I get in front of all the employees. And I think that the one fear that I have to make sure that I you know, try to address, I don't want the employees, or there's a sense, I think, that you went from Columbia Sussex, which was obviously a nightmare, and then the state ran the place for almost 2 years, and now, you know, we're under the Icon Group, and I just want to make sure that they understand that this is a totally different situation than under Columbia Sussex, and I think there's a wait-and-see attitude amongst the employees, and I think that I have to, you know, address those concerns and those fears and let them know how committed, you know, Mr. Icon is and the company is to turn this place around. And because I saw that and witnessed it firsthand, so I need to convey that to the employee base, because they really, you know, you really have to tip your hat to these employees. These long-term employees have been through hell here, and so I think it's about time that they've seen some positives, and that's what we're going to deliver over the next couple of years.
Right. And when you're ramping up, you know, this you know, high-level players, you know, these people have to understand that the type of level of service that's expected of them, you know, is going to be over and above, and apparently they've been doing that, from what I understand.
And the other thing that I think that it's important, particularly you take, for example, the dealer staff, you know, we are putting a lot at risk when we bring in that type of customer,
right,
and they benefit tremendously. I mean, the toke rates when some of these guys come in are huge, and so it all works hand in hand. We're going to do whatever we can to get that level of business in here. That helps us over the long run and as a company, and it helps them. And so it's incumbent upon them to deliver a great experience, not just to the guy that's got a potential of losing $1 million, but I think that once they see that commitment on the part of the company, I think that starts to get some momentum amongst the staff, and it permeates through the whole property. And so that's what we have to leverage and build on.
Talk about the Atlantic City market. many experts. In fact, one guy that used to run this company, I spoke with last year, and he predicted that in a few years there's only going to be 5 or 6 Atlantic City casinos operating. So, you know, kind of saying the market's dead and buried and will never return. Do you agree with that, or do you think Atlantic City is just in a period now where it's going to revive itself?
I don't agree with that. I know, actually, before I left, I know there was a big discussion with the management team there and the ownership at Colony about whether Atlantic City was going to become Reno, Nevada, a dying and a dead gaming market, or was it going to reinvent itself like Las Vegas did in the 90s with the opening of the Mirage, and, you know, we saw everything that happened there. And I think it's going to fall somewhere in between, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that 2011 will represent the bottom for the market, you know, through, you know, the period of time when Revel opens. I think when Revel opens, I do think that we will see growth return to Atlantic City. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not more pain to be felt by the current operators, because I think the market will grow, but certainly not enough to absorb everything Revel does. Right. So I think that that's going to cannibalize some of the existing business. But I think that that's a short-term thing. I think we saw that when the Borgata opened. It certainly didn't grow the market enough to absorb all of their business, but there was a great few years from, I think the Borgata, was it 2003, I want to say? You know, through 2006, there was a number of really robust years here in the market, and I think you could attribute that to the Borgata and the opening and the excitement that it created. Right. And I think that, and I hope that that's what we're going to see with the opening of Revel, excuse me. But I do think there's a possibility that we'll see some contraction.
But, and then, you know, hopefully we'll see Hard Rock break ground as well, which will, you know, if they break ground by the end of the year, we're going to have two projects in the ground at the same time. When was the last time we saw that?
I mean, you know, you'd have to go back to the early 80s, right, yeah. I think.
I personally believe there's going to be a revival of the city, and then, you know, some of these other properties, when they change in, I'm anxious to see what they do at the Marina with the Golden Nugget brand over there, and, you know, I think there's more possibilities.
That is going to be a great little case study. You know, you have Resorts, which is approaching it one way, where they acquired the property for, you know, relatively a low amount, and they're trying to revitalize it basically through marketing and rebranding and re-energize it that way. And it wasn't that – their financials weren't that much different than Trump Marina, and with Landry's, what they're doing in sinking $150 million, give or take, into that property. I like their chances there. I think, first of all, it's a great facility. Yeah. The bones of the property are great. It's a great location. You're next to the two, you know, most thriving properties in the market. Right. So I think that's a good approach. I think that'll be another good addition to the market.
You know what Atlantic City was like in the past year. Not only was there competition between the casinos, pretty heated competition, but, you know, the city government really hasn't helped out. Things have changed now. How do you envision that? How do you see the cooperation between the casinos in the first place?
Well, I think that there was always generally cooperation amongst the casinos, and obviously we all are looking out for our own interests, but we generally work together for things that would help the industry as a whole, I think, pretty well. I do notice a big difference from both the state's involvement. I think that's a positive, you know, being on the Casino Association again and seeing the interest all the way up through the governor to do whatever he can to help turn the market around, putting together this tourism district, putting together a master plan on how to create some of those other non-gaming amenities that make this more of a exciting destination. I think that those are all positive things. The other thing that I've seen is a different mentality with the regulators. I had a meeting with the head of the DG, Mr. Reebok, and it was interesting. Historically, the mentality was the industry versus the regulators. And in my conversation with him, he's very competitive. But he was talking about it's us versus Pennsylvania. It's us versus New York. It's us versus Delaware. And what could we do, meaning the regulators, what could we do together, the regulators and the industry, to beat these other states, to beat these other jurisdictions? That was really a refreshing mindset and something that didn't exist before.
Now let's talk. And the CRDA now is going to be controlling the tourism district here that the state's controlling. Do you think they'll be able to coordinate and clean up much of the blight that's in this area?
Well, I mean, certainly the state has given them the resources and the backing, and so I think you've got more of a commitment than we've ever had before. It's a big task, right, and it's a big job, and we need to put some teeth behind the legislation and the you know, the decision to have them be intimately involved with that. I'm confident that we're gonna get more done now than, you know, we have in the previous, whatever it's been now, 30 some years of the industry. As a matter of fact, I'm on the tourism advisory committee. We had our first meeting last night, which is comprised of some residents as well as some business leaders throughout the Atlantic City, and there was a lot of energy and a lot of excitement, and you know, people are coming together to help.
Do you think there's a negative perception about Atlantic City that needs to be changed, certainly from the safety standpoint? You know, I know when you look at the stats, you know, at the boardwalk, as Mayor Whalen used to say, one of the safest streets in America, but, you know, the perception is that it's not that safe. Do we need to change that perception?
We do need to do that. You know what, I think it's more of a regional perception than a national perception. It's interesting, because being in Indiana for 3 years, when I would bring up Atlantic City, the people, and the property was in the Cincinnati market, whether it was Cincinnati or Indiana or Northern Kentucky, people by and large didn't have a negative perception of Atlantic City.
Right.
I think it's more along the Northeast that there's that perception. Matter of fact, a couple different times we brought customers from our property, Hollywood and Lawrenceburg, to a couple different properties, and they were blown away by the Borgata. They were blown away by some of the the casinos here, and thought that it was a wonderful experience, and the ability to be able to go to two or three different casinos, which doesn't exist in the Midwest. So they thought that it was a positive experience. So
once you get the people here, you think we're going to win them over?
Yeah, I think we can. I mean, there certainly are some issues that we have to come to grips with, but I think by and large we paint ourselves negatively, and that fuels, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, there's a lot of positives that we should be touting,
right,
instead of constantly bemoaning all the issues. I mean, every city's got issues. Las Vegas has issues.
Sure.
New York has issues. Philadelphia has issues. Atlantic City has issues. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing uncommon about that. We need to focus more on the positives than on the issues.
All right, I just have one more question, and you've only been here a month, so it's probably not fair to ask you this, but where would you like to see this property in 3 or 4 years? What would you like to see happening here in terms of gaming, non-gaming, other development?
I'd like to see, first of all, from a physical standpoint, the spaces that are in need of renovation or repair be totally upgraded. 3 of our 4 towers, I think the hotel rooms need to be renovated. I think that's a priority. Number 2, I think we need to renovate and update the casino floor. And as I said, take that look and feel of the quarter and kind of extend the quarter into the casino space and have that look and feel of Old Havana run throughout the entire property. And I'd like to see a better mix of non-gaming revenues coming into the property, and at the same time, I think that will rejuvenate and generate more gaming revenue as well. So I think that would be my goal, you know, 4 years from now.
Well, Tony, it's a great property. I know you've got a lot of experience in the business. I think you're in the right place at the right time. So we'll check back with you next year and find out how you're progressing toward those goals.
That would be great. And hopefully along the way here, we'll have some exciting announcements that we can make to share with everybody some of the plans that we have for the Tropicana.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.